Hey everyone, this is Brett. Today is July 16th, 2011, and I'm very excited about today's show. It is the first episode of School Sucks Podcast, entirely devoted to the topic of unschooling. Of course, it will not be the last. And we have a great guest to introduce this topic in detail. That's Kelly Halderson. Please check out her website at unschoolbus.com. So we're going to talk about her awakening, her family's journey towards unschooling, the successes, the challenges, their travels on the unschool bus. And if you want to see Kelly speak, I suggest checking out the New England Unschooling Conference, which will be held in Wakefield, Massachusetts from August 25th to August 28th. And that's it. So thanks for listening. Ooh, I hope you're having a good summer. All my friends in the Northern Hemisphere there. All right, bye. My guest today is Kelly Halderson. Kelly is perhaps best known, amongst my audience anyway, for the Unschool Bus. You can check them out at, is it unschoolbus.com, Kelly?
Yes, it is. Or you can find it at Unschooling Liberty. It's the same page, just two different URLs.
And you are the mother of three teenagers, all unschooled?
All unschooled, yes.
Now, have you always done that, or is that something that's developed in recent years?
Well, I have not always done it. They did attend two different private schools. They've never been to public school. They went to a Montessori-type school, and then went to a Christian school. My oldest until fifth grade, the youngest until second grade. Then I pulled them out and homeschooled them, and very quickly turned to switched to unschooling, or evolved to unschooling, or whatever you want to, however you want to put it. I joined an unschooling group right away. And I didn't own the term, though. I was kind of, you know, my family was already like, oh, no, they're homeschooling. What's she going to do, and how's they going to learn? So I didn't really own the term, even with family and friends and even with the other unschoolers in the community. You know, that's what I was doing. I just didn't own it until a couple of years ago, and then said, you know what, this is what we're doing. And because we evolved so far into the, like, radical unschooling end that it would be silly for me not to say that's what we do, and to not be, you know, afraid to say that's what we do kind of thing. I just had to build up some confidence.
How did that transition happen, or why did it happen, from homeschooling to what we call unschooling?
Well, for me, it didn't really... for me, what happened is I took the kids home, and there were a few things that I bought some curriculum that first year, and I'm already libertarian leaning. I'm more voluntarist, actually, more almost on the anarchist end. And so I had this household where I didn't want to be authoritarian at home. I didn't want to be forcing my kids to do anything, really. And I didn't like those conflicts, and I wanted to reinforce positive relationships. And so I found when I was sitting down trying to make them do workbooks, you know, that first year, that it just was a really negative experience. I mean, I had some success when, you know, I would do rewards or whatever. I'd say, oh, okay, if you do these three pages, then you can, or you read for 30 minutes, then you can play video games for 30 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that worked fine. It really did. I didn't have any kind of problems. It wasn't like a conflict. But it just felt so artificial and arbitrary, and I didn't like it. So I just sort of shifted into not doing much work, like sit-down work. I would take them places instead. And then in 2008 and 2007, actually, the presidential campaign and Ron Paul's presidential campaign. I got really involved in politics there, and the kids, you know, did all kinds of stuff. We went to all kinds of events, and that kind of became our focus. And then they learned all kinds of other things throughout that. Like, we did a project with Dave Ridley. I don't know, He's a videographer in New Hampshire, and he did some civil disobedience and at the state capitol, and my kids were involved. They made some puppets, and then it was a play about Henry David Thoreau, and he did puppeteering without a license at the capitol in New Hampshire, and he and our kids made the puppets, and we went to the event, and what happened from that was we read about Henry David Thoreau, and we talked about how many years you'd have to, you know, how many days, and I mean, it was just all kinds of things happened from that and evolved, and I went, oh, wait a minute. We can really just live, and we really kind of just learn, and this is all right.
I would think it would be kind of a challenge once children have some exposure to institutionalized schooling to turn it around and kind of reinvigorate that curiosity or that self-direction. Did you find that at all?
I really didn't. And you know what's funny is a lot of people, and I think that probably I hesitated at first to call things unschooling too, is because all the reading I did said, you got to go through this de-schooling process, and it's so many years for how many years you've been in school and whatever. And I really didn't find that. My kids were always interested in doing things that were fun and adventurous and interesting, and always really wanted to talk to me about what I was doing or what I was interested in, and I always wanted to talk to them about what they were interested in. We just had these huge chunks of time taken up by school. So once we took that out, you know, it just expanded into all those other areas, and we really didn't miss the curriculum at all. So I really didn't find that, and I didn't find that I needed to de-school too much either. It was more of an emotional thing, like I had to build up confidence when it came to other people and relatives and family and be okay with saying, no, this is what we do, or not talk about it too much, you know, because the judgments of other people, that was much more of a problem for me than getting there philosophically, because I was already there.
So you've touched on that just a little bit, but what, as far as friends and family were concerned, what was their objection? What did they say when you tried to describe to them what you were doing?
Well, I would say it's still there to a large extent. There's a little bit of coming around, you know, here and there, but basically it comes down to, you know, these kids aren't going to know anything. What's wrong with you? They're not going to be able to, how are they going to be able to live in the real world? You know, all the typical things that you would think people would say. Like, oh my goodness, they have to sit in the classroom all day long to be able to communicate with other people. What about the socialization? How do they have any friends? You know, I mean, every one of the most ridiculous assumptions people make are all of a kind of assumptions that I get thrown at me.
Mostly fear-based, too. And I think it's interesting that there would be the question that we hear so often, how are they going to live in the real world? Well, as we speak, they're living.
They're living in the real world.
Yeah, exactly. Well, most kids who are being schooled are not living in the real world, and most of the people who are teaching them, for lack of a better word, have never spent any time in this real world. They did their 12 years of school and their 4 to 6 years of college, and then they went back into the schools. So
yeah, right back into the institution.
Right, exactly. So were you able to have, I know you said that this is ongoing, were you able to have any success with convincing people that this was the right choice? And if so, how did you do it?
Well, I think that the more, because I write about it on my blog, and you know, I have a book that I'm going to be releasing too, so that's given me some degree of credibility with my family, and they see a lot of other people looking to me for information and answers and stuff. So that has actually helped with my family. I think it's kind of funny, you know, and ironic that if somebody else looks in and goes, oh, that's interesting, and I think they're doing a good thing and a positive thing, and I want to do that too, and I want to emulate that, then the family members go, oh, okay, well, maybe it's not so bad, whereas I've been here all along talking about it, and it's, you know, but families can be like that. I mean, I think it's all, I don't think it's, you know, out of spitefulness or meanness. I think it's out of genuine concern, and if you try to be, or try not to take it personally and take it, which I did in the early years and now try to look at it, is, you know, these are people being compassionate and care about me and care about my kids and they are genuinely concerned. They genuinely are worried that these kids aren't going to be okay. And it's okay for me to try to reassure them in different ways. And any way they can come around is just fine, you know. I guess that's what I'd say on that.
Right. Do you ever think that there's like this whole range of emotions that people seem to have towards unschooling or even homeschooling in general, from, you know, hesitation to apprehension to antagonism? And did you ever get the sense, because I felt this way, that maybe sometimes for certain people it's not really so much about compassion, and certainly compassion may be the case some of the time, most of the time, but there's a kind of...
With family, probably.
What's that? Yeah.
I said with family, definitely compassion. Compassion is usually it, but yeah, with other people, no, I would say.
That there's almost like some kind of, I don't want to call it jealousy, but it's kind of like, it's saying to them, or it's making them realize that they're kind of dumping their kids into these schools where they're basically being, you know, babysat 35 hours a week. And do you think sometimes it makes people feel like they're not doing what they should do as parents?
I think definitely. I think another thing too is with people that have been in the system, like other, like teachers and whatnot, I think that they think it's an affront to their purpose in life. You know, if kids can just learn on their own, what purpose do they have? And that by unschooling or even homeschooling, that we're saying they're irrelevant and that they're not needed. And people really feel hurt by that, and then get angry and lash out. So I think that it's all those. I mean, I definitely think there's negativity and defensiveness there too, just as you were explaining.
So have you ever tried to, as far as outreach is concerned, you know, interact with other families who are doing homeschooling and try to persuade them or encourage them to move more in this direction?
I don't, because, I mean, I would say if I do, I do it very passively.
Mm-hmm.
I try to advocate for people, for parents to do whatever feels okay for their family. I'd like to share with them that what we're doing is allowing our kids more freedom and that it's really positive, and, you know, try to model that as opposed to push people in that direction. I do occasionally ask questions. Usually it's more not face-to-face, though. If I'm having, you know, I'm in a homeschooling group and we're all having a discussion, I'm not going to say, you really should do this, you know. I much prefer saying, well, you know, think about it. This is an option that you could take, and it is okay, and they are okay, and I can give you some examples of my kids or other kids that I've met that might alleviate some of your concerns. You know, usually the concerns are in the radical end of the homeschooling spectrum, where, you know, you give the kids freedom to stay up if they want to stay up, or use video games and screen time at their discretion, as opposed to making arbitrary rules as to when to stop. So I find that most people are more concerned about that. If they're concerned about unschooling in the academic sense, it's usually math. And I'll try to share experiences and my own knowledge to show them that, you know, it's not, you can let up, but I certainly don't push in that way at all, because I understand that some people, you know, that it takes a while. You know, and for a lot of people it's a whole paradigm shift. So if you push, and I don't really like to push anybody. That's why I unschool my kids. I don't want to push them even.
Right.
So, you know, if you just instead try to live as an example and show people that, you know, this does work, there are problems, of course, but share those problems and be open and honest and just emphasize working on relationships, not only with kids, but with the people you're talking to, then I think that more people just kind of come around and go, oh, I know somebody that does that, you know. That's not so bad. It's not so crazy. But I think it takes time. I think it's a shift. I think it's a paradigm shift. And I don't think it's something that you can really teach people about. You know, I think they need to come to it in their own. Does that make sense?
Right, right. It's a discovery. And it's like, oh, this is how I like to be treated. Maybe I should
right.
treat my kids that way.
It's an awakening. I found the hardest thing I still find the hardest thing and the most interesting thing is that voluntarists and libertarians and so on and so forth often have very authoritarian homes. You know, they want to kids make sure they get all this information in, and you know they're very academic focused homeschooling if they have them at home, or they have them in a very rigid prep school, or you know, or something along those lines. Which I actually, you know, I had them in a Christian school at first, so I had a pretty authoritarian type environment there for a
sure.
bit too. So it took me a little while to come around and go, wait a minute. Why am I modeling this authoritarian household, and then I'm going to go, oh, you're just suddenly free when you turn 18, which didn't really make much sense and didn't feel very authentic or whatever you want to say to me. So, but I noticed that a lot of libertarians and voluntarist anarchists, you know, freedom-minded people in general, have these very authoritarian households. And then on the other end of the spectrum, coming from the unschooling, there's a lot of unschoolers. So many unschoolers, I would say far more than are liberty-minded, are very, very much on the social end, the socialist end, or the liberal, very liberal Democrat end of the spectrum. So they espouse all this freedom for their kids when they're little, and then they turn 18, and no, we need to have these social restrictions. Oh, we need to have this restriction. Oh, we need to make them do this if they're an adult. So to me, it's very odd. There's not more overlap, because it really feels very much like an extension on both sides. I mean, I came to it from a libertarian perspective, but, you think that you would extend the ideas of freedom into an adulthood, but and that rules and laws are really the same thing. They're just one bigger, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't seem to be that way. So if I try to influence anybody, that would be the only direction that I probably try to do it. If I meet unschoolers, then I go, you know, do you see how this is kind of like, you know, if you're forcing people to have health care and you're forcing people to do this, that, you know, that's kind of a pushy relationship. Is that what you want to have happen when your kids get up and get older? Do you, you know, where's that trust you had when they were younger? The trust disappears when they're adults, you know, and I try to say things like that. And sometimes people come around a little bit, and other times they get grumpy and say, I shouldn't be associating
with
you.
Right.
So, no, how dare you associate those two? Well, they're kind of the same thing.
Well, no, I think it's really interesting, too, what you mentioned about libertarian households being authoritarian at home, especially with respect to education. And I wonder if that has something to do with, I mean, libertarianism to me is philosophical. It's not political. And I think if people tend to be more, political libertarians, they might look at the outside world and see what the discourse is and what the propaganda is and say to themselves, boy, this, you know, there needs to be a lot of intervention on my part at home to prevent this stuff. I don't know if that's it or not. What do you think it is? Because I think that's kind of strange.
I think that's a good way to look. I mean, I think you've got it. I think you've got it, really. Because I certainly felt that way when my kids were little. I'm like, and they were in, you know, I sent them to the Christian school or whatever. I'm like, no, I need to have them, you know, well-educated, you know, and I need to make sure that they fit into society really well and that they excel so that people will listen to them and then they'll see that this, I just had so much of me wrapped up in my kids I felt they were just extensions of myself, whereas when I shifted to an unschooling perspective, I really looked at them much more as individuals. I didn't look at them as extensions of myself as much. I didn't do it all the time. You know, I certainly looked at my kids as individuals to some extent. But I think I had way more of myself wrapped up in those kids than I thought I did, you know. And it took me unschooling them to realize that. And I think that a lot of libertarian households, those parents have that same thing. They're like, you know, this is important. It's so important that I raise these people to be good libertarian citizens or, you know, or whatever, that they don't think about it in respect of to these are individuals separate from me. I need to respect their autonomy and give them as much freedom as I can. And they just don't look at it that way because they're so close. You know, they're your kids. They're your children. They're your blood. They came from you, you know. So, of course, and the world sees them as, I mean, I still people come up to me all the time. They're like, either they say some, they don't usually say anything negative, honestly, but, you know, if somebody comes up, to, oh, your kids, they so impressed me. I'm so, you know, and they're telling me this, and I'm listening, and I'm like, oh, thank you, because it does feel a little good, but I try to really work hard to distance myself and go, no, that's them. That's not me. Thank you for giving me the compliment, but really it's them you need to give the compliment to.
Right.
Because they're
right.
Their own person.
Yeah, I think it's so often that parents, especially when I look at a lot of the things that I've dealt with professionally, with college consulting and what son or daughter needs to do to win parental approval, it's almost like parents often see their children as these trophies. You know, that they're, or these medals that they're showing off to their friends or their family as, a mark of their success. So it's very important that there will be bent into what earns parental approval. And, I think that there really is no, when you combine that kind of parenting with school, many people reach adulthood with very, very little sense of self.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That institutionalized system of just living for somebody else, you know. And also, you know what I think is another piece of it is that, and why people, from going back to earlier, is where you were talking about the disapproval. I think part of the disapproval is those kids need to pay their dues. You know, those kids need to go through what I went through. They need to be in all the schools. You know, I mean, you think about the. You read about the stories of the doctors and the interns. When they were interns, they have to work 48-hour shifts, and that, oftentimes they get so tired they can't even function or think, and then there's efforts to try to change that. But all the doctors that are currently working, they're like, no, we had to do that, so they have to do that too. That's part of paying their dues. That's part of life. That's part of the system. So, and I think that... that's how a lot of outsiders looking into homeschooling or unschooling look at it. They're like, no, wait a minute, I had to go through school, and it sucked, and I think everybody else should have to do that, too, and those kids aren't going to learn how to deal with bullies, or they're not going to learn how to, sit in a classroom and behave and be obedient or, you know, all that, and they need to do that because I did, you know, and I think that's another big piece of it that
kind of
gets overlooked.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes back to those uncomfortable feelings that people have when they first learn about homeschooling or even unschooling, especially maybe parents. I mean, I've talked to kids who have all of these stigmas about homeschooling. You know, like homeschool kids are weird, you know, and their parents are weird, and that's why they do it, and they leave it at that. Because I think even at that age, they realize, well, you know, I have to do this, and I don't want to really look too much into why somebody would get
the other
something else. Yeah, because if my parents are not going to bend on, you know, what I have to do 7 hours a day. So instead of, like, kind of maybe being curious or even envious about the lives, the educational lives that other people my age lead, I'm just going to ridicule them. And I think certainly the parents, they learn that or have learned that from adults because there's a lot of, I think that the idea, too, of I had to do it, so you have to do it, is kind of a way for this non-acknowledgement of mistreatment to perpetuate itself, right? Like, if I treat you better than I was treated, I have to acknowledge that I was mistreated. So that's not happening. You know what I mean?
Or I have to acknowledge that all that time is lost. All that time was wasted.
Yeah.
All that time that I could have been exploring what I wanted to do, all that time that I could have been, you know, really, truly learning something is gone. And that's kind of painful. You got to kind of mourn that once you come to the realization that, oh, wait a minute. You know, like that's one thing that certainly... happened to me. And I thought, well, I kind of thought it was all a waste to begin with, but when I really, really thought about it and I'm really unschooling my kids, and when I look back and I go, wow, all that time I was just stuck in those realms. And I was kind of a defiant kid, so I didn't get in trouble, but I didn't do the work because I didn't want to do the work. I don't know. I had this one story where when I was in high school, we had to take a test on some book or whatever, and I refused to do any of the tests except that I did the extra credit because that was an option, you know. So I always had this kind of, I don't need to do it just because you tell me to.
Right.
But at the same time, I still didn't really mourn for, I know that sounds very dramatic, but it's true that I didn't mourn for all that time that I lost in those classrooms, because I tried to look at it as, I got a lot of things out of it, but not anything that school was trying to teach me. And I do try to look at the good in everything. But if I really think about it, that's a lot of time to mourn. You know, time is our most precious thing in life. And the idea that we're locking kids up for all, I mean, that's what we're doing. We're forcing them to go. They have to go and sit in these classrooms and listen to people, tell them what they need to know, which is so ridiculous if you look at the world and how much it changes. I mean, I can't tell you how many times my husband Jeff and I talk about, like, oh, the metric system, I remember third grade, the metric system, everybody's going to be using the metric system. You have to learn this. You have to learn. Nobody uses the metric system except mechanics that are working on foreign cars. You know, it's like, and I'm sure scientists and something, but in daily life, you don't use the metric system. I mean, there are so many different things that people think are going to be, oh, this is absolutely going to be everywhere. You have to know this. And then it never comes to pass. And then all that forced, you need to know it, you need to know it, was wasted time.
Yeah.
Wasted time.
And when I was in middle school, they were right about computers, but unfortunately we were just sitting there entering command prompts into DOS and printing squares, you know, and when they told us that those things were going to change the world, they really weren't showing it. How that was going to work, even though the seeds of the technology we have today were certainly already in existence and already available. So, and boy, I wish the metric system...
So what they were actually teaching you. They were actually teaching you wasn't even relevant.
Wasn't relevant to what was going on.
Computers are going to be popular. I would say that was accurate for me, too. I didn't say certainly. Whatever I learned in my computer awareness class in seventh grade, I don't think was helped me at all.
Right.
With computers nowadays.
Right. And I think, too, when we think about all of this lost time, because, I mean, certainly I can go back into my 12 years of government education and I can pull out a few memories of things that I enjoyed or things that were helpful, but the amount of lost time, wasted time, being trapped in those buildings is, when you really, really contemplate it, it's overwhelming. And I guess the consolation for parents who reflect on their own educational experience would be that they are able to use those lessons to give their children something better than what they had. Instead of what most people do, which is what we've already mentioned, I had to do it, so you have to do it, because I'm absolutely not going to acknowledge that I was mistreated by, you know, my own parents or the people who claim to care about me or claim to be trying to help me. So we're just going to perpetuate it, and you know, you should do the same when it's your turn. So yeah, I think that the real reward of that experience, of course, the time cannot be regained, but to use those lessons to pass something better on to the next generation. And of course, I think that always happens in little ways. I think, you know, parents always try to do a little bit of a better job than their parents did. But of course, we're all still, I shouldn't say we, but most people are still, and they learn this in school, conformists. And, you know, as far as school and church and what's right for our family, they are going to have a difficult time really setting themselves apart from their neighbors or other people in their family whose approval they so often seek.
That peer, they need that peer support, I think, a lot of times.
Yeah.
And that goes along with, you know, having to fit in into the community, into the world. And if you're an outsider, then that's not a good thing. But when you look at the world and you look at the people that are hugely successful, oftentimes they are outsiders. And the people that all these conformists admire are oftentimes outsiders or people that have done things differently, you know. And so I find it interesting how there's just kind of a block a lot of times with people. They just don't see that, he did things differently. Oh, Bill Gates dropped out of college. You know? I mean, things like that. People that don't live life, you know, by the book.
Mm-hmm.
And excel in different ways. And I think if more people did that and were able to do that and emulate that. I can't tell you how many people email us and say, oh, I could never do what you're doing. You're doing something so wonderful. It's amazing. And all we're doing is, I mean, it might sound crazy on the surface, but it's not. We just travel around and you know, my husband does occasional jobs like roofing or carpentry or, you know, something of that nature. Or I do writing, and we've written a book together. And we do things so that we can earn enough money to travel around, but it's not like we're independently wealthy or anything like that. And mm-hmm. people that have, I have so many people that have much more money than we do have, you know, said, how do you possibly do it? You know, I could never do it. I wouldn't be able to afford it, or I couldn't. I'm like, really? Are you really thinking about that then? Are you really thinking about what you wouldn't have to pay for a mortgage, what you wouldn't have to pay for a car payment, you know, what you wouldn't have to pay for? Yeah, we pay for gas and food, you know, and occasionally we pay to stay, like we paid to stay here in Vegas. But generally, we don't pay to stay places. We boondock a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or we stay at people's houses. So, but people can't get over that. You know, they just, it's like this mental block. They're like, I can't do it. There's no possible way. Because it's something out, but at the same time, they admire it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's just so, to me, it's very odd. It's like, if you admire it, and you think this this awesome thing that you'd want to do, and I'm looking at you, and you're doing far better financially, you could really do this easily, do it. Don't be afraid, just do it. You know, you'd never know what life's going to bring you, so don't wait, you know? But people don't see that.
No, I think that's great that, you know, some people are expressing admiration for what you're doing. I think that what we talked about before is maybe a lot of people have an admiration that turns into envy, and envy turns into resentment, and resentment turns into ridicule and attack. Because
yeah,
they're seeing you living a life that they don't feel like they could live, or that they could, you know, help their children to live. So
yeah.
That would be that would lead us to the last question I had, which is why the bus? How did the bus come about?
Oh, that was that's kind of, you know, once your kids get to be teenagers, you need to. I found anyway, and a lot of people that I've talked to that homeschool, is a lot of times what happens is the kids end up going to high school because they want to hang out with other kids every day. Because when they're teenagers, social interaction is a huge, huge issue. So we found that our kids had a lot of fun at events. And they got to meet a lot of similarly raised kids at like unschooling conferences and unschooling events and things like that. So we tried to foster those relationships with other unschoolers because, you know, it just, that was the direction we were going. And I know these kids are still not going to be in school. I don't have to worry about them going off to school and then my kids going, oh, my friend's going off to school. What do I do? So in an effort to do that, you have to make your community much bigger. And you need to make things more interesting. Well, you don't need to. We needed to. I might keep saying you need to, but people can need to do whatever works for their family. For us, we needed to open the world up to the kids so they had more opportunity, more opportunity to meet people, more opportunity to visit places, more opportunity to do stuff. And we got a Class C RV a couple years ago, and we went down to New York City and traveled a teeny bit, and the kids loved it. But it was a really, my husband traded our 72 Harley for it. And and it broke down. Mm-hmm. And then it couldn't move. And then we had had that bug of, we definitely want to go and travel. And we were looking at Class A motorhomes, and it was just so expensive. And we really had very little money. And then my husband is very into building and mechanics, so he said, I want a bus. That's what I'm going to do. I want to convert a bus. And I was like, oh, no, no. Because I had that, like, oh, no, it's going to be like, we're already weird enough. We don't need a bus, you know, to make us even more weird.
Right.
And, you know, but I was already writing and stuff. So, and he just kept saying, and he's like, no, they're like, and he looked at them. He looked at the schoolies online and people's conversions. And we found a place in Brentwood, New Hampshire that sells retired school buses from Maine, or Massachusetts, sorry.
That's where I went to elementary school.
Yeah. Well, they have buses. They retire. They have to legally have to retire buses after 10 years, no matter what shape the bus is in. Mm-hmm. So, which is just like a whole other issue. But it's so absurd. So now there's this excess of buses. And so the thing, we looked at them, they're at like $3,000 for a bus, for a perfectly good running bus with an engine that's rated for hundreds of thousands of miles and only has 100,000 miles on it, and it's in great shape. And when he showed me that, and we went and looked at him, and he kind of totally knows how to warm me into things, and we just kept looking, and the kids kind of got excited about it and went, oh, that'll be kind of fun. Then we can make the rooms, then they can all have their own space, because in a Class A RV, they would just have little bunks, and then they, you know, they're teenagers. They want to have their own little space. So they started working on plans, and then we finally just shifted to decide, and I said, all right, wait a minute. Well, I do write the blog. How could I use the bus? You know, how could I get into the bus and be excited about having a bus and, you know, incorporate it into what I already do? And I went, oh, well, I can make it on schoolbus.com. And then so once I got that down, I went, all right. And then I said, oh, we can have our own room and we can design it the way we want. And this is going to cost us way less. We're going to be able to get it into it way sooner. It's going to be neat and cool. And so what if it's weird? You know, with the website, I'll be able to at least put out there what we are so people will see we're somewhat normal, you know? And it just kind of, from there, we just went with it. You know, we found the place in Brentwood let us put money down a little bit at a time, so we kind of even, like, put the bus on layaway. We would do a little job, put money down, and then go back and give them a little bit more money. And then we got it, and he gutted it in one day, and then all the pieces inside, we didn't have anything to put in it yet when we got the bus. We just had the bus. So he cut out all the seats, and then he got a call to do a condo conversion job in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and he went, and they were about to throw away a kitchen set, like a stove and kitchen cabinets, because they were ripping them out. And he's like, oh, I guess we'll do the kitchen first on the bus, because we just used that that they were going to throw away. And then somebody gifted us a refrigerator, and it was at one point we said during the thing is, we'll know what to do next on the bus when the next thing shows up, you know, because that's just how it happened. You know, people would say, oh, you want this for the bus or whatever. And so basically all we bought was the bus. We bought the floor, which was like $200, and then we bought plywood to build the structures for the bed, and then like mattresses and stuff. So overall we figured out that we probably spent about $5,500 on the actual bus and living space. And so if you think about that, that's, you know, our house. That's all we paid for. Since then we've had some repairs. But since traveling all over the country, but
you know, too, with the kids involved the whole time. When the finished product is ready, it's kind of like they have some ownership and they have some understanding of what goes into living as a family. You know, which I think is an experience that a lot of kids don't get. And also, I think that the idea of when young people are self-teachers. The exposure to all different parts of the country and being able to travel just must be a wonderful experience for them as well.
Oh, I think so. And I think that in the building of the bus was, too. They were involved in every part of it. They helped design their own little rooms, you know, in their bunks, and my son Griffin helped put in the floor. I mean, so they were very involved, and since they're so involved in our life and we have we talk to them at length, and Jeff and I are both pretty creative people, so we do a lot of we just do a lot of designing of different things, like from art to structures and stuff like that. And they're always around that. And I think that kids if you have a good relationship with your kids are, you know, you inspire your kids, basically.
Right.
You know, so my, especially with my daughter, she sees us make stuff all the time. She's always making stuff. And then your kids inspire you. So it's like this wonderful circle of you know, you bounce information off of each other, you bounce ideas off of each other, and it's just such an awesome environment to learn, not just for the kids, but for us. I mean, we really do truly learn so much from our kids. And I think our kids do from us in turn, because it's just that circle of respect and positive relationship and encouragement and you know, we're not afraid to say, oh, I don't know if I like that idea. And they're not afraid to say that to us.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we do things together and then we explore. You know, if there's some place somebody wants to go, we try to make it work. You know, my son wanted to meet these guys, Rhett and Link, who are YouTube videoers and now have this show on called Commercial Kings on some network. And he's like, they're going to be in Oklahoma. And we were in Texas and we were supposed to be heading back up to New England. And he's like, I really want to meet them, because he's been interested in their channel for a couple of years now. And I said, all right, let me see if we can work it out. We went a whole huge bit out of our way, but we went and saw them, you know, and he got to meet them and they did a whole video like on the bus. So it was really a cool experience and he got to see how they work. And that's something, video is something that he's really interested in. So, you know, it just kind of works like that. And when you're willing to go out there and travel or make things happen for your kids that they ask for, you know, as best you can, then it just proves to be a really great learning environment, like I said, for both the kids and for us, because we do the same things for us. It's something Jeff is interested in doing or something I'm interested in doing, like we came to Vegas because I wanted to go to Freedom Fest. So, you know, which is a libertarian gathering. So we do these things try to do things for the whole family and try to look at, is this something you want to do? Will this work in? And come to a respectful agreement with everyone. And it just proves to be a really positive environment most times.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. I don't want to imply that, oh, it's just beautiful and wonderful and absolutely perfect, because it's not perfect, but it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I met you and your family at the Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And wasn't it your daughter who started during
dog
walking business,
yep,
because there was something that she wanted to buy and she knew, yep, that she needed to raise the money to do it?
Yep.
And how old,
yep,
is she?
She knows. She's 13. She's, uh-huh, 13. And she did, it wasn't just dog walking, she did babysitting too. And she did it with another girl. And she earned like $120 or $150 just in those couple of days. And she was so smart. I was so impressed with it. Not as, oh, this is my kid, but just impressed with her, because she even scheduled it. She's like, well, I'm not going to schedule anything for Saturday because I want to hang out with people on Saturday. I mean, she like really did it on her own terms. You know, she didn't do it too much. She didn't, but, and it was really cool. I was like, and now all three of them, well, actually two of them, my oldest doesn't really have anything particular planned for Park Fest, but now they're all planning for next year a little bit. Oh, actually, Wolfgang is a little bit. They were talking about, you know, doing the cab stuff, and my daughter's going to do dog walking again. And, you know, they just have all these plans of, oh, this is great. I can do something bigger next year. I can do something more. And my middle son was saying something about doing a, you know, trash delivery service or something. So come trash pickup service or something.
Yeah.
So it's really cool, and they don't always do stuff like that. They know that if there's something they want, they're pretty resourceful where they come up with a way to make it work. But I think that's part of just the environment they live in. You know, I mean, my husband and I, we don't have a lot, but if something happens, we really work hard to try to come up with some idea, or, you know, we're pretty resourceful to get ourselves where we need to be. You know, we're not, like I said, we're not like, you know, hugely wealthy or independently wealthy or anything like that. But we do all right. And since we've embraced this lifestyle of living more freely and with our kids and together and traveling and living really on our own terms, things have gotten much better, you know, financially speaking. We, you know, we had some financial problems, and I feel like it's totally shifting, whereas it just flows much more. It sounds very flighty, but it just seems to be working like that.
Right. I think when you're in a family where there's less, maybe with, you know, everybody working together and part of the same thing, there's less of these win-lose situations and less of this, you know, friction and conflict that maybe in most families, I would think, might prevent some problems from being solved or even addressed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, like we saw your daughter and her friend with a bunch of dogs. They walked by our camp, and of course I was very interested in what they were doing, and she explained why she was doing it, what her goals were, and they moved on. And I was sitting there with a group of people, and one of them said, you know, a lot of kids could learn from that. You know, like, I want something, so I'm going to do something to achieve it. And I said, a lot of adults could learn from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where I had been so stuck in this, this covering these Wisconsin unions and just our whole, or not our, but, you know, the political culture in this country in general, where it's like, how can I force other people to do what I want and make it look legitimate so I can get what I need kind of environment. Yeah, that was, like, really refreshing to see,
mm-hmm.
and I remember being very, very impressed, like you were, by what I saw and how it was explained to me. So,
yeah, she's a pretty good kid.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So, I was shooting for 30 minutes, Kelly. We actually got 50, so that's great.
Oh, cool.
And for those who have not heard, we are also together on the 98th episode of my show called Porkfest Education Forum. And I'm sure we'll be able to team up in the future and do some more work. I'm sure there's plenty of things that I forgot to ask you about and things we could have gotten into more in depth. But thank you very much for your time, and I hope you enjoy. You guys, you said you're in Las Vegas right now?
Yes, and we're headed to the Hoover Dam.
Awesome.
Later today. So, pretty cool.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time, and I will talk to you again soon.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.